It's Monday, the 9th of November, 2015. Happy birthday to no one. And welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Monster Podcast, brought to you by Moneyball.com.au and Freezerlin. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter at @RedRock_BBall. And if you want to be like Freezerlin and be a sponsor of the podcast for one day, all you need to do is leave a review on iTunes. And thank you again to everybody who has done that. It's been awesome. And make sure you go and get your reviews in on iTunes and become a sponsor of the podcast for a day. Make sure you're also checking out moneyball.com.au if you are in Australia or New Zealand. They are Australia and or New Zealand's or Australia and New Zealand's only daily fantasy basketball site, or sports site for that matter. So make sure you're checking out moneyball.com.au. All right, sorry, the podcast is a little bit later today for you guys watching live on YouTube. Had a few other things to attend to, but it is obviously here now. And we're going to talk about some huge, huge performances in the NBA yet again. And to do that, we have to start, or there's no other place really to start. We have to start with Andre Drummond. He is the monstrous line of the night. I had someone, I think it was Michael Paraskevis, who tweeted at me, if Andre Drummond is not the monstrous line of the night, he will stop listening. I hope that he was being a little bit cheeky with that comment, but Drummond was awesome yet again. We know the sort of performances that he has been putting up, and he did it again in this massive win for the Pistons, a huge comeback victory. Drummond had 29 points. He had 27 rebounds. He had 2 steals and 3 blocks, so it wasn't just a points and rebounds night for Drummond. He also went 14 of 19 from the field. Yes, he went 1 of 6 from the free throw line, but you know what I'm going to say? I don't care that he went 1 of 6 from the free throw line. You do care if you're in a roto league, but that's why you probably wanted to avoid him in that sort of situation. But he was just absolutely amazing again. Another 9 offensive rebounds for Drummond. He's putting together a ridiculous season. He is now averaging 20.3 points per game, 20.3 rebounds per game, and he is almost at 2 steals and 2 blocks a game. 1.8 steals, 1.8 blocks. He's at 55% from the field. He is putting together a top 10 head-to-head base season. His roto ranks is obviously a lot lower due to that really, really disgusting free throw percentage, which is currently sitting at 42%, which is actually a 3% rise on where it was last season. But Andre Drummond, in a head-to-head league, he is absolutely killing it at the moment. He's playing a stack of minutes. He looks like a beast. He looks almost unstoppable at the moment, the way that he's playing. He's putting together some huge, huge run of games. It's going to have to slow down, but he has had 3 20-20 games in his first 6 games already. He's double-doubled in every single game. This is how ridiculous he's... Okay, so he's had the 3 20-20 games. He's also had an 18-19 game and a 12-17 game, but he's also blocked multiple shots in 4 of the 6 games. He's also registered multiple steals in 4 of the 6 games. He's had at least a steal and a block in every single game. The lowest rebounds he's had is 10. And as I said, out of his last 4 games, his rebound total is 20, 29, 17, and 27 today. Just putting together just a tremendous run, Andre Drummond. He's a guy, again, in a punt free throw build. I took Rudy Gobert in the second round, and I was so close to grabbing Drummond. I thought, you know what, I'm going to grab Gobert. I'm regretting it at the moment. Things might change as the season goes on, but Drummond was a guy that I did have pretty highly ranked in the head-to-head ranks, and he is absolutely taking over the Eastern Conference. And if he's not an all-star, a lot is going to have to go wrong at this point. The waiver wire line of the night goes to none other, and I didn't think I'd be saying this guy's name, Dion Waiters of the Oklahoma City Thunder. Waiters played 25 minutes off the bench. He scored 19 points. He hit a couple of threes, a couple of assists, 3 steals, a block. Really efficient. 6 of 9 and 5 of 6 from the free throw line. And Waiters is playing, he's playing okay this season. He's playing 26 minutes a game. The 8.6 points don't look all that exciting, but he's getting you a 3 and 4 rebounds and 2 assists and a steal. And in terms of 9 cat value, he comes in ranked 145th so far on the season, which is good enough for 14-team leagues and probably not for 12-team leagues. But he's showing a little bit. Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves when we're talking about Dion Waiters and what he's able to produce. But he's putting together some pretty nice performances. He's one of the better Thunder players. And look, the Thunder are a pretty good team, but they do lack wing players outside of Durant. Waiters is playing the most minutes out of those guys like Robertson and Morrow and Singler. He's getting 26 minutes a night. He's in a decent role. He's closing a lot of the games for the Thunder. Doesn't mean that you have to go and own him, but he's someone to sort of just watch. And you deeper league guys, as unappealing as it might be to add Dion Waiters, he's having value in those deeper league formats. So you can have a look at him and try and make use of the fact that he's getting 26 minutes. He's hitting some threes. He's a decent steals guy. He's getting you some okay rebounds. The assist numbers aren't too bad. He's doing sort of a little bit of everything. He's also not turning the ball over very much as well. So Dion Waiters is having probably a little bit more value than a lot of people would have anticipated. The young gun of the night, and I've got a feeling this is going to happen quite often this year, Kristaps Porzingis gets it again. He played 26 minutes. He got another double-double, 12 and 10. He hit a three. He had two blocks. Efficient free throw shooting. Bad field shooting with 3 of 10 from the field. And this has got to change at some point this season. His field goal percentage will come up. He's under 40% at the moment, and he's still at 12 and 8.5. He's hitting 0.7 threes. He's over a steal, over a block a game. He's got a great free throw percentage. I've said it a million times. He's a must-own player in 10 and 12 team leagues. He looks fantastic. He is an outside shot at the Rookie of the Year this year. His per 36 numbers are out of control, 18 and 13 with a triple one as well. And not only a triple one, in his per 36, he's at like two steals, two blocks, and 1.1 threes, putting up some great numbers. And if that field goal percentage goes to 44, 45%, we're talking about a guy who's going to be a 15, 16 point a night scorer with those rebounds, with those defensive numbers as well. So he's not just doing it in terms of those just points and rebounds. He's providing value in quite a few categories. So Kristaps Porzingis, if for some reason he's not owned in your league, he has to be owned. He looks super impressive. You know that I'm a massive Kristaps Porzingis fan. And he did it again, albeit against a pretty poor Lakers team. Speaking of pretty poor, let's go to the dud of the night, and we're going to travel to the other side of the country from where that game was, or the other, another area of the country, let's say that a bit more accurately. We go down to the Miami Heat, and we talk about Goran Dragic, who played 26 minutes and went 2-2-3. He only hoisted 5 shots. He hit one of them. He is having an absolute nightmare of a season this year. He's still averaging 30 minutes a game, but he's at 11 points, less than a 3. He's at 4 assists, less than a steal, less than 3 rebounds. Even his field goal percentage, which has held a lot of value for him the last 2 years when he shot over 50%, he's currently at 46. Maybe that comes back up, but he just doesn't look like he fits on this team. He's not getting the same amount of shots in Miami. He's only averaged 9 field goal attempts per game this year. Yeah, back in that, when he was the All-NBA guy in Phoenix, he was averaging 14.5 attempts, so that's 5 shots less, and that's really impacting what he can do. Look, the assists are still okay. There's still a bit of value in getting 4 a game, but they're not great. Like last year, he was at 4.5, so it's even dropped from that, and 4.5 is a pretty low number for a starting point guard. He's just not providing any value at all. The problem with Goran Dragic is now that if you own him, you can't sell him in this point because he'll probably get better, but he's not going to get massively better. So if you think you can get a deal which feels like equal value, I'm okay with doing it, but just don't sell at his current value because he might rise another 20 spots or so. He's currently ranked outside the top 100. He might rise to the 80th rank, but I don't think he gets much higher than that. So if you're buying low, again, on the other side of things, if you're buying low on Goran Dragic, don't expect him to be a top 50 guy. I know I've said that a million times on the show as well, but just you got to bear that in mind that I think that there are buy low guys, and then there are guys that I think this is what they are, and I think this could be just what Goran Dragic is for this season. That's all the awards for the night. What we're going to do now is obviously talk about the rest of the games in a little bit more detail. If you're watching along live on YouTube, I'm going to bring them up on the screen now. I think that's the one we're bringing up. That's the one. So now you can see that up on the screen. If you are watching along on YouTube, we'll talk about these games. As Michael Bolton says,
let's get to it.
Thank you, Michael. The first game on the slate is the Los Angeles Lakers and the New York Knicks, one of the two early games of the day. Roy Hibbert had probably his best game as a Laker, 18 and 10 with a couple of blocks. He's been really hard to own so far this season, but that was a nice little performance. It really depends on your team as to whether he is a must-own guy. I would say that in most situations he is. Yeah, 8.7 points isn't really cutting it, but 7 rebounds and 2.7 blocks, that's really hard to leave alone, especially the 2.7 blocks and 87% free throw combination. You don't get, well, you don't. There's nobody who gives that sort of free throw and blocks that might be available on a waiver wire. Yes, the rebounds are a struggle. There's no steals. It's no threes, no assists. There's a subpar field goal percentage as a big man, although he is shooting 46%, which is his highest mark in the last three seasons. But it's for decent rebounding numbers and big block numbers with the efficient free throw shooting that you add Roy Hibbert. So I think that he probably should be owned in most 12-team leagues, but it doesn't have to be your team. It sort of does have to fit the team that he's on. Meta World Peace played an inexplicable 16 minutes. 8 points with a couple of threes, a steal and a block. So they're still putting up some nice numbers, but there's nothing much to really see there with him. Brandon Bass and Ryan Kelly completely out of the rotation as Byron Scott does his best to stuff this team around as much as possible. D'Angelo Russell, 6-5-3 with three steals. It is very, very hard to own D'Angelo Russell at this point. And Julius Randle, he is going to murder your field goal percentage a lot this year. He went 3-12 from the field for 6 points. 11 rebounds is nice, but I think this is a bit of a standard Julius Randle line. You're going to get nice rebounds, you're going to get no defensive stats, and you're going to get a guy who hurts your percentages. So there'll be the occasional big game. There will be a lot of games like this as well. Jordan Clarkson struggled with his shot, as did Kobe. Clarkson had 10 points and not much else. Kobe had 18 points and 3 assists and a steal. Look, Clarkson still needs to be owned. I think Kobe still needs to be owned as well. But their ceilings aren't high with the way that Byron Scott is playing this team. And you know my frustrations with Byron Scott if you've listened to this podcast at all over the last couple of seasons. On to the Knicks. And when I talked on yesterday's show about the Knicks from a daily fantasy point of view, there were some guys that I really liked in terms of their ability to exploit the weak Lakers matchup. Robin Lopez had his best game, 14-13 with a block. He's not going to be this guy very often. He'll be better than he's been at times. He's going to be worse than this most likely. But the Lakers, there's opportunity to feast for big men. And Robin Lopez did. Langston Galloway, 14-4 with 3 threes off the bench. A nice night from him. And speaking of inexplicable, Jose Calderon played 35 minutes. He went 14-5-3, a couple of steals, a couple of threes, easily his best game for the season. Not getting too excited about that. What it does mean is that Jerian Grant just played 18 minutes. He had 8 assists and not a lot else. I'm still holding Jerian Grant if I own him. I want to see exactly how this plays out with the Knicks over the next couple of weeks when Aflalo is back, which is likely this week. I'm hopeful that they give the keys to Grant. This is the only time that Calderon's really played more than, say, 20 to 23 minutes. So, look, look at this. Calderon played 35. Grant's done. It's like one game that had happened. Grant had been consistently getting minutes more than Calderon. Let's see, if it becomes a trend, then you go, okay, well, maybe Grant's not getting the starting job at any time soon. But it is one game, so we need to pay attention there. Mallow had 24 points with 8 rebounds, not a huge amount else. And Sasha Vujacic had 5 points in his 15 minutes, speaking of inexplicable minutes to players. Now, Kylo Quinn, he has really cooled off. Only 11 minutes for him, 1 point and 2 rebounds. There's no point in holding him in 12-team leagues, and 14-team leagues is probably the right range for Koch at this stage. The next game is the second early game, which is the Indiana Pacers and the Cleveland Cavaliers. Paul George, 32-11-6 with a couple of threes. No steals and no blocks, but really nice percentages, so a good night from George. And Monte Ellis had a bit of an explosion for him as well, 25-5-3 with a steal and 2 threes. And for some reason, Monte Ellis has been dropped in a lot of leagues. I don't understand it, but he can't be dropped. He can't be sitting on a waiver wire. Don't drop Monte Ellis, as bad as he has struggled at times this year. The huge minutes for George Hill continued. He played 40 minutes. He went 14-5-5, really inefficient with his shot. Don't expect him to be that inefficient, and he's a guy that I really like watching this season. And Jordan Hill got another start in place of CJ Miles. He played 32 minutes. He went 7-11 on just inexplicably bad shooting. 3-15 for Jordan Hill, a couple of steals and no blocks. I don't think there's any real use in adding Jordan Hill anywhere. CJ Miles will be back soon. Roddy Stuckey will be back. The Pacers will then start to go smaller, and that will push Hill down in the rotation. What it means, though, is Hill is getting these minutes, and it's limiting Miles Turner. So you can't hold Miles Turner in a 12-team league, I don't think. He played 18 minutes here, 6-1 with a block. Yes, his fantasy upside is very intriguing, but they're giving Lavoy Allen minutes over him. They're giving Jordan Hill minutes over him. They're giving Jan Mahinmi minutes over him. So when you're the fourth guy off the fourth peg cab off the rank in terms of big men, you can't hold on to him in a standard league. I'd love to see him start to get involved more, but it's just not happening at this point, and you have to adjust to that as a fantasy owner. For the Cavs, Kevin Love, he got close to a 20-20 game as well. He went 22-19. He had 2 threes. He also threw in 3 blocks and was really, really efficient. 9 of 18 and 2 of 2 from the line. So a big Kevin Love night. While LeBron went 29-6-4 and he was super inefficient. 10 of 23 from the field, 9 of 14 from the free throw. So LeBron, while he put up some pretty big numbers, he could have actually really cost you a couple of categories on the last day of a head-to-head matchup. He could have really dropped your field goal percentage and exceptionally dropped your free throw percentage as well. So not a great night for James in that respect. Richard Jefferson got another start over J.R. Smith. He played 30 minutes, put up 2 steals and 5 points, not a huge night. And Mo Williams went 10, 5, and 8 in 38 minutes. Had a few questions coming through to me about Mo Williams today and talking about what his value is going forward. Look, he's really good now, obviously, but when Kyrie comes back, there's 3 guards missing. Kyrie, J.R. Smith, and Iman Shumpert have all got to come back, and they're going to have to take minutes off Mo Williams. They're going to have to take minutes off, obviously, Jarrett Cunningham and James Jones, Matthew Dellavedova. All these guys are going to lose minutes, but Williams is not going to play 38 minutes. He'll come into a 24-minute-a-night role, and I doubt that really has much relevance in 12-team leagues. We'll wait and see, but I could see, there'll be some nights when Dellavedova plays more than Mo Williams, depending on what they want, defense, offense, depending on the way they want to go. But with 3 guys due to come back into this backcourt rotation, Williams is going to take a pretty hefty hit to his minutes. So I think that a lot of his value is going to evaporate, and I don't really know that he's going to be a great option long term. So if you're trading for him, just don't give up too much of an asset, because I don't know how well it's going to work out. Timofey Mozgov continues to be outplayed by Tristan Thompson, 9-6 in his 23 minutes. You can drop him in 12-team leagues. Tristan Thompson was really good, 16-8 with a couple of steals. He went 7 of 8 from the field. Let's not expect this sort of offense from him all the time, but he's a great plug-and-play guy for rebounds and generally for some field goal percentage and blocks as well. Not looking to own him all over the place, though. I don't think that he's a must-own player in 12-team leagues. The next game is the Toronto Raptors and the Miami Heat. Jonas Valanciunas, again, was super efficient. 8 of 12 from the field, 17 and 5 with a steal. Not much else, still only 28 minutes. Dwayne Casey, still a dickhead, needs to play Valanciunas more. Kyle Lowry played 37 minutes. He can't really play too much more. 15, 6, and 8 with a couple of threes and a steal. Damari Carroll sat this one out with his plantar fasciitis. So James Johnson got the start and played 26 minutes after basically not playing at all. And this is one thing that I don't understand it. If Johnson's not good enough to even get a couple of minutes through most of your games, why is he all of a sudden good enough to play 26? Yeah, put Terrence Ross out there. Give him a bit more of a run. Get Corey Joseph out there. Yes, I really like James Johnson. I think he's a really good player. I think he can put up fantastic fantasy stats. But why get a guy who hasn't even played and just throw him out there for 26 minutes, more than the rest of the wing reserves? It just doesn't make any sense to me at all from that sort of point of view. Luis Scola, 7 and 3. Yuck. Corey Joseph, 4 and 5 in 23 minutes. And Bismack Biyombo grabbed 7 rebounds in his 15 minutes. Not a lot to really like from the Raptors. They got destroyed by the Miami Heat here. DeMar DeRozan, 5 of 14 shooting for 16 points, 3 assists. A pretty empty line for him. The 6 of 6 free throws is nice, but overall not a great DeMar DeRozan performance. A big performance from Hassan Whiteside, though. He went 20-11 with 6 blocks in just 25 minutes. He also hit 4 of 5 free throws and didn't turn the ball over. So one of his best nights for the season. Chris Bosh had a career-high 4 3-pointers, went 23-8. A solid night for him as well. And Mario Chalmers with close to a triple-double, 9-7-6 with a steal and a block. Let's not get too excited about Mario Chalmers doing that anytime soon. Dwayne Wade just had 12 points in his 25 minutes. 3 rebounds, 2 assists, not a great night from Wade, and same as Luol Deng, who's 6 and 5, and Deng's a guy that I don't really think, in head-to-head leagues especially, I don't think you need to own him in 10-team leagues, and in 12-team leagues, it really depends on the way the situation is or the way your team looks as to whether he is a must-own player. The Phoenix Suns and the Oklahoma City Thunder, Eric Bledsoe, 28, 2, and 11, a good night from him. His backcourt mate, Brandon Knight, not quite his best performance, 14 and 4 with only 1 assist and a couple of threes. Markieff Morris shot the ball just dreadfully, 7 of 20, but still chimed in with 19 points, 5 rebounds, and a steal. So if for some reason he's around on your waiver wire, he needs to be owned. PJ Tucker's struggles continued. We know what to do with him. And TJ Warren, he got hot, went 7 of 10 for 17 points, but not much else. And that's the story of TJ Warren, is that when his shooting is on and he's generally a pretty good shooter, he'll get you points and he won't get you much else. Alex Len played 20 minutes, 8 and 5 for him, while Tyson Chandler really struggled, 1 point and 8 rebounds in 24 minutes. I had someone message me today, they were considering dropping Tyson Chandler. I don't think that we really need to drop Tyson Chandler, but there's a case to be made that Chandler and Len during this season end up splitting minutes down the middle. John Lua continues to get minutes, and I don't really understand why. He played another 12 minutes here for 7 points, and there's not much else to really talk about from the Suns' point of view. They got destroyed by the Thunder. Kevin Durant went 32-11 with 3 steals. Russell Westbrook went 21-6-13 with 4 steals. He's putting up some huge numbers. And Enes Kanter with 28 minutes, he got 21-7. He went 9 of 10 from the field and 3 of 3 from the line. So we know what Kanter can do when he gets the minutes. The problem is when is he going to get the minutes? And that's going to be a fluctuating issue for him moving forward. Steven Adams was able to play through his back problems. He played 20 minutes, went 7-5, and had 5 block shots. But his minutes, again, like Kanter, they're going to fluctuate, and it's a lot harder to own Steven Adams in a fantasy league. 10-9 from Serge Ibaka with no block shots, not a great night for him. And as usual, most of the bench guys providing pretty much zero into the fantasy box score. The last game of the night was where all the excitement was happening. We've touched on Andre Drummond's big game. Reggie Jackson exploded for 40 points. He was incredible in that fourth quarter. 3 threes, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals. Just incredible efficiency as well. 15 of 26 from the field. He started off a little bit slow. He's really turning it on at the moment. I hope everybody who drafted Reggie Jackson is pleased with what they're getting. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, this is what I reckon Caldwell-Pope can be. He played 39 minutes, 16 points, 2 threes, 4 rebounds, 4 steals. He's a really good defender. Now, 4 steals is clearly not realistic to happen all the time, but he can be a guy who gets 2 steals and 2 threes a game while getting some points and 4 to 5 rebounds, and that becomes a real valuable player. Marcus Morris has definitely cooled off. His shooting was terrible, 5 of 18, but he still played 37 minutes. He went 13-3-3 with 3 steals. So we still need to make sure we're owning Marcus Morris, but a regression was always going to happen with him, and just be prepared that he could get worse. And there might be a stage in the next month or so that Morris becomes not a guy to own. Ersan Ilyasova is not a guy that you want to own everywhere. 6 points in 26 minutes for him, a couple of threes. He's basically splitting time with Anthony Tolliver at the moment. So Ilyasova is a guy I had high hopes for heading into the season. It isn't really working out at this point. And at this stage, I think you should move on and look in other directions in most cases. For the Blazers, Damian Lillard, 26-4-11, 4 threes, a good night from him. And Myers Leonard, he's back. His shooting is back anyway. 7 of 13 from Leonard, 17 points, 3 threes. Not much else, 2 rebounds and an assist, but if he was dropped, and he was in lots of places, you have to own Leonard. He's getting the big minutes. He's in a pretty key role for this team. I really, clearly, obviously like him. CJ McCollum went 18-4-2 with a steal, so the points are still there for him. The other categories, not so great, but a good night in the scoring category. And Al-Farouq Aminu had one of his quietest nights. Still contributed 9 rebounds, which is okay, but overall, not a great night. Alan Crabb had a perfect shooting night, 7 of 7 for 15 points, hit a 3, had a steal, had a block. Gerald Henderson is apparently coming back soon, which is not good news for anyone who watches NBA basketball, but it is going to impact Alan Crabb's minutes. So if you're thinking, yeah, look, that's a good performance from Crabb, remember, it's 7 of 7 shooting, which isn't going to happen, and Henderson's going to come back. Crabb remains a guy only for deeper leagues, much like the other players like Mo Harkless and Noah Vonleh. Ed Davis grabbed another 6 rebounds in his 20 minutes, while Mason Plumlee, he struggled a little bit, 7-5 with a steal in 26 minutes. I still think that he has to be owned pretty much everywhere at this point, even though there are some definitely some quiet performances from Mason Plumlee. All right, that's it for Sunday's action. Time for a short break while I play Bryce Whitney's song, Don't Go, which... And the band used to be called The Everloss, and now they're called Columbia with some sort of weird spelling. Had some people ask me who the band is. You can always find the links to the songs on the podcast in the show notes on redrockbasketball.com, and you can now find out where to download the band's music. So Bryce and his band are going to take us to the break with their song Don't Go. I saw ya. We're back now, ready to talk about the games for Monday, the start of a new week. I will touch briefly on the schedule at the end of this section, but there's not a huge amount to talk about with the schedule this week. You know what? Let's talk about it now. The Minnesota Timberwolves play 5 games, so you're going to get some value there. They also play 4 of those games on quality days, and the way I like to determine quality games is games when there's less than 8. I know a lot of places, including Basketball Monsters, default is 5. I tend to look at it as 8 because if there's 8 games on, you can pretty much get everyone. If you've got a standard lineup of 10 guys and 3 bench, if there's 8 games on, you can pretty much get all of your players into a starting role. The 2-game teams, the Bulls, the Wizards, the Suns, and the Heat, you can still use some of these guys in a daily changes league. In a weekly lock league, the only guys you consider there are Butler, Wall, Bledsoe, Whiteside, and maybe Brandon Knight. But in a daily sort of situation, for as bad as it is that those guys are only playing 2 games, the way that their schedule is used, they can still be used. The Pistons play... No, that's not the Pistons. The Bulls, the Wizards, the Suns, and the Heat are the four games. The Heat play back-to-back. They play 2 games, but what they do is they play it on Tuesday and Thursday. So there's no back-to-backs on Monday and Tuesday apart from the Wolves. And then the next lot of group of guys where you can add them and actually use them, because Wednesday is the full scheduled day, is Tuesday and Thursday. So a guy from the Heat, you can add them Tuesday, Thursday, and then they don't play the rest of the week. So then you can drop them. The Suns, the other way around. The Suns play, you don't have to add a Suns guy at the start of the week. They play 2 games, but their first games are Thursday and Saturday. Again, 2 days where the schedule is light. So these guys with only 2 games, they don't have to be completely disregarded. They've just got to be added at the right time and used the right way. There hasn't been any team so far this season that has had a weekend back-to-back. That changes this week, and that is the Detroit Pistons. So if there are guys like Marcus Morris who are around, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, even Ersan Ilyasova is worth a look. When you get to that Friday and you've got limited acquisitions left, you can add one of these Pistons guys, and they'll play 2 games, whereas everyone else you add there will only add 1 game. So keep an eye at that, and you can even make that move, say, after the games lock on Thursday, because as we know, Friday is another big day. So if you add someone from the waiver wire onto your team on Friday, they probably won't play. So you could add a Pistons guy on, say, Thursday, and then get that double game from them Saturday and Sunday when no other team is getting that. So that's just something that you can pay attention to in terms of working the schedule. There's not as many teams or as many ways to do it this week, but there are a couple of ways that you can do it. If you want to check out my whole article on that, it is on Basketball Monster. All right, let's look at the daily fantasy games for tomorrow and what sort of information we can get from them. The first game is the Chicago Bulls and the Philadelphia 76ers. The Bulls are favored by 7.5. We have a really low total here, 195.5, and that's not all that appealing. There's a couple of injuries to pay attention to. Jeremy Grant is probable after getting a scratched cornea in the game on Saturday. If he is out, it opens up some minutes for a few guys on the wing. So Hollis Thompson becomes a guy who I become interested in at 3,800, especially for a tournament. He can put up 20-plus points at 3,800, which is something that we can have a look at. TJ McConnell, though, from the Sixers is the guy that I think has the most value. He's still priced at 4,600, so it's gone up a little bit, but it's still enough for us to really pay or get a lot of value out of him. So I like him. I like Jahlil Okafor at 5,900. I think that he is also good value, as is Nick Stauskas at 4,300, who is really starting to find his feet now in Philadelphia. Nerlens Noel will like to bounce back after his stinker where he put up under 5 fantasy points. 7,400 for him. I think it's an okay matchup against the Bulls if they're running Mirotić out there at the 4 or even Pau Gasol. Nerlens Noel should be able to take advantage of that sort of matchup. For the Bulls, now Mirotić is still a pretty decent play. Yes, he's been bad the last 2 or 3, But at 5,600 in a tournament, I like his, especially against Philadelphia, I like his ability to really exceed that and be able to go up with some pretty big numbers. So Nikola Mirotic is a guy that I do like despite his recent struggles, and people might be steering clear of him. That's another thing in tournaments. If they're steering clear of Nikola Mirotic, and you might go in and he might be owned in 3% of lineups, and that'll be in your favor if he does break out. So it's a good idea to have Mirotic in one of those high upside sort of lineups that you can put out there. Now, Jimmy Butler at 7,900, there aren't many high-priced shooting guards. If I'm going to be spending high money, I'm probably not doing it on the shooting guard position, but Butler is a guy who, aside from last game, has been relatively consistent this season. At 7,900, though, he needs to be better than what he's been to return a huge amount of value. Or Isaiah Cannon's been really good lately, but at 5,000, that price feels a little bit too expensive for my liking, so I don't really think I'd be investing much in there. Derrick Rose has dropped down to 6,900, so his price has dipped. He becomes interesting at that price. I think there is a little bit of something in him, but only for a tournament. So I don't think we're getting too excited for him in cash game plays. The next game we have a look at is the Orlando Magic and the Indiana Pacers. There is no spread for this one because we don't know the status of Nikola Vucevic of the Orlando Magic. We also don't know CJ Miles and Rodney Stuckey. All those guys are currently listed as questionable. If Vucevic plays, it's not a bad matchup for him, but if he is out, Dwayne Dedman is the guy that we want to look at. He put up some pretty nice numbers. He put up over 30 fantasy points in the last game. He's priced at 4,100. So if Vucevic is out, Dedman is the guy that you want to own. As for the other guys, this is just not going to be a great game. The Pacers do slow things down. Paul George at 8,500 is worth a look. He's averaging 41.9 points this season. He's had a couple of games of over 50 already. Against the Magic, does he get a chance to do that? Well, the Magic seem to have a knack of pushing games close and maybe pushing them to overtime. So there's definitely some value there in Paul George. Don't think that it's a great bet, but there is an opportunity for him. Evan Fournier at 5,400. We all know the story of Evan Fournier this season. Been putting up some good numbers, but I'm not really sure that at 5,400, that's a great spot for him from a daily fantasy point of view. I would really like CJ Miles in this matchup if we knew he was going to play and if we knew he was going to get big minutes. We don't know either of those things, so I'll probably steer clear of him. And Victor Oladipo at 8,000, that feels a little bit expensive for me. I'm going to be leaving Alfred Payton and Monte Ellis alone most of the time. And Toby Harris's minutes are just too fluctuable. I don't even think that's a word. Fluctuable? Let's go with it. I don't think that we can rely upon him. He could get 25, he could get 35 minutes. Same with Aaron Gordon. Not really much to see with either of those two guys. The Minnesota Timberwolves and the Atlanta Hawks up next. The Hawks are favored by 9, and if everyone hasn't realized, the Atlanta Hawks are actually 7-1 on the season. So for a team who was, you know, the Vegas over-under had them down, I think dropping about 10 games, they are flying, equally as good as what they were last year. The total of 202 in this game. The Timberwolves, yes, they had a big victory against the Bulls. The Hawks in Atlanta are a bit of a different story. They're humming at the moment. Kevin Martin's the one we have to watch for the Timberwolves. He was probable in the last game due to a personal matter. He was back at practice, so this seems like there's no doubt that he plays to me. Overall, value-wise, there's not many guys that really stand out in this game. There are a number of players who could be decent and are more tournament options, like Karl Anthony Towns at 6,700, like Al Horford at 7,600, Paul Millsap at 81. He's also... Paul Millsap's a decent cash game play at that, but at 8,100... you need him to go for 40 points. And can he do it? He's averaging under 40. Yes, he can. He's solid. We know that. But not sure it's a... Now that he's over 8,000, it makes me steer a little bit clear. I still like it, no doubt. And I still would have him in some lineups. And I'm sure I will. And same with Horford. But their prices have creeped up a little bit where I'm a little bit more weary of it. A couple of punt play options. Dennis Schroeder at 4,600. He's definitely got the ability to go over 20. And same with Gorgui Dieng at 4,400. I know everyone's down on Gorgui Dieng, but at 4,400, I think there's some value in him. Everyone's love child at the moment, Nemanja Bjelica. He's priced at 4,000. He put up almost 40 fantasy points in the last game. He's averaging 22 this season. I think that makes him a pretty solid play in most sort of situations. So we can go ahead and use him in most games. The Hawks might shut him down. They might cause a bit of a problem. But if he's going to be getting those minutes, and he's averaging 29 minutes on the season at 4,000, I think he's a worthwhile player. Same as Kent Bazemore, who's averaging 29 on the season, and he's at 5,000. So it's really hard to steer clear of Kent Bazemore at that sort of price point. The other guys, the point guards, Jeff Teague and Ricky Rubio, don't think I really want to be getting on with those, although both of them are averaging 35 points, but you have to spend 7,500 to get those guys, and I don't really know that that's a great price. And same with Andrew Wiggins, even though he is less than 7,000, and even though he put up such a big line in that game against the Bulls, it was only 39 fantasy points. And while that's a lot, for as good as he looked and as flashy as the scoreline looked for Wiggins, it's not that much. So at 6,900, I don't think I'd be wanting to put Andrew Wiggins into my lineup. The next game is the Portland Trailblazers and the Portland Trailblazers and the Denver Nuggets. The Nuggets are actually favored by 1.5 here. That seems a little off. Yes, Portland were embarrassed by Detroit in that last quarter, but Portland seems to be a better team than Denver. It's a big total here, 207.5 points. The major injury we need to keep an eye on is Joffrey Lavernier for the Denver Nuggets. That obviously changes their big man rotation and what they go to do. If Lavernier plays, and we knew he was going to get 25 minutes, then at 4,000 he becomes an interesting guy against Portland. We don't know that, so that makes it risky. I like Emmanuel Mudiay going up against the defense of Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum at 5,600. He should be able to pop 30 fantasy points on these guys and return some nice value. Other Denver guys, don't mind Jameer Nelson. Again, against this sort of defense, he can put up some okay numbers. And not many other Denver guys that I really want to pay too much attention to. Danilo Gallinari is at 6,700, but that's not enough for me considering that's not cheap enough for me considering he is only averaging 26 points this season. Onto the Blazers, I like Al-Farouq Aminu. A bit of a quiet game today, but he's been putting up great numbers for the season. And against Denver, I think he can have a real big game. Same with CJ McCollum at 6,600. I think that he could be in for a 30-plus fantasy point night in this situation. And if you want to spend some money, I mentioned spending money on a shooting guard before is not a great idea, but Damian Lillard at 8,900, I think that is a pretty decent bet. Yeah, same with Moutier going up against Lillard and McCollum. That's great for him. Lillard going up against Moutier and Jameer Nelson is going to be pretty decent for him as well. So I look at him in that sort of situation and think there's some value there. And Myers Leonard got things going today with his shot started to fall, not much else, but yeah, I think there's upside for him at 4,400. The next game doesn't have a spread. It's the Sacramento Kings and the San Antonio Spurs, and that's because we don't know the status of DeMarcus Cousins for this game. It's unlikely that he plays, but there is a slight chance that he does get onto the court. The other thing we don't know is Darren Collison is not going to play. We know that he's out, but he will be back. So I mentioned yesterday, I wanted to clarify this, yesterday's podcast, I was talking about Collison being out indefinitely. I think, okay, that's 3 to 4 weeks. And just after I finished the show, news came out that he's only considered day-to-day. So all that talk that I mentioned of maybe there's a bump for Marco Bellinelli and maybe Ben McLemore gets a little bit more time and Rondo becomes a great guy, well, Collison's likely back. So all that stuff pretty much changed as soon as I stopped the podcast. But with Collison out of this game, Rondo becomes a great option. 6,400, he put up 56 fantasy points against the Warriors. The Spurs are a little bit of a different story, so you're not expecting 56 points out of him again, but he's going to have to play pretty big minutes, so I like him. I like Marco Bellinelli at sub 4,000. He put up 26.5 in the last one as well, so he becomes interesting. DeMarcus Cousins, if he does play, I don't want to spend 10,300 on a guy in his first game back from Achilles soreness. He could go out and blow up, yeah, no doubt. But there's enough risk there that Cousins could play, and then the Kings are not really timely with their injury news as well. So the Kings, you could put Cousins in a lineup, and then he's playing, and it comes down to the end, oh, sorry, he's not playing, or he's playing 10 minutes, or whatever he's doing, staying away from DeMarcus Cousins. Kawhi Leonard at 8,200, I think he's a solid investment. He's really, really stable for cash games. And Manu Ginobili, not a bad tournament guy to look at. He has had a game of over 30 points this year at 4,700. There's a little bit of value there. Same with Tony Parker at 4,900. I'm still avoiding LaMarcus Aldridge at 8,200. I don't want anything to do with him at that price. He has had one big game this season, not much else. And with Cousins likely back, Willie Cauley-Stein, Kostas Koufos, both of those guys' ability to impact the scorers is going to be reduced. The second last game on the docket is the Detroit Pistons and the Golden State Warriors. there's a blowout factor here. Even though the Pistons had a big win, they're on a back-to-back. They're traveling to Golden State. We know how good Golden State is. The Warriors are favored by 14, so that's obviously a huge margin there. A total of 209, but the Pistons have been playing well, so maybe they do keep it closer than that. But there is always that worry that guys like Curry get pulled a little bit earlier. Andre Drummond at the moment, he's averaging over 50 fantasy points a game. Averaging. You got to pay $9,300 for him, but at this point, you almost can't not do it. He got 70 in the last game. He's putting up just ridiculous stats. At $9,300, he's probably the best value big price guy on the board. Marcus Morris continues to get minutes. He's at $5,800. He's an okay guy to look at. Andrew Bogut should be back from his concussion, so we need to just factor that in. I don't think we want to rush Bogut out there in the lineup, but I also don't know if we really want to run Festus Ezeli out there, who's been really good lately, but we don't know exactly how this is going to impact his minutes. Not many other guys with huge value here. Look, Reggie Jackson's been putting up great numbers, but you're spending $8,000 on him. If I'm going big on a point guard, it's probably Damian Lillard that I'm spending the money on in this situation. And Steph Curry at $11,000, we know how good he's been, but the blowout factor is pretty real for this game as well, where he could be limited. So you can play Steph, but just there is a little bit of risk involved in that. Klay Thompson at $6,800, don't think that's a great matchup for him. Caldwell Pope is a pretty decent defender, and Harrison Barnes has been probably surprisingly good. He's consistent, and he's not consistently good enough though for me to look at adding him in into a daily fantasy lineup. The last game of the night is the Memphis Grizzlies and the Los Angeles Clippers. Got a couple of injuries to pay attention to. Brandon Wright is questionable with a knee issue, and Zach Randolph has popped up onto the injury report with a sore calf. And the big one, of course, Chris Paul is doubtful to play. Paul's not going to play. Austin Rivers becomes the guy you want to look at there. Yes, he only put up 15 fantasy points in the last game, but he did get 31 minutes. He's going to get minutes again. And all he needs to do, if he gives you 20 to 25 fantasy points at $3,500, he's done his job. Without Chris Paul, JJ Redick at $4,900 is valuable. Paul Pierce is worth a sneaky look in some tournaments at $4,000. But Blake Griffin at $10,200, I think you want to put a lot of stock in him. He's averaging 47 for the season. If he's got the ball in his hand, you can expect more assists. The problem here is that we're talking against the Grizzlies. They slow it down, good defense. So that limits a little bit of these guys' effectiveness. But I'm not overly worried about getting Blake Griffin out there. I'm definitely not playing Zach Randolph. I'm definitely not playing Marc Gasol in this situation. Not many other guys that are all that appealing, to be honest, in this sort of game. What I'll do now, and if you were watching this, I accidentally put up my daily fantasy picks right at the start of the show. I'll do it again now, and now I'll actually talk about them. So what we do, or what I do when I talk about this, is we talk about at each position, three guys. A cheap option, so a sub 5,000 guy, a 5,000 to 7,500 guy, and then a 7,500 plus guy. So at point guard, we're talking Austin Rivers at 3,500, Rajon Rondo at 6,400 as the mid-price guy, and Damian Lillard as the big money point guard, he's at 8,900. For shooting guards, Marco Bellinelli at 3,900, CJ McCollum at 6,600, and Jimmy Butler at 7,900. As for small forwards, Hollis Thompson at 3,800, and that's especially true if Jeremy Grant is out. El-Farouq Aminu at 5,800, and Kawhi Leonard at 8,200. At power forward, Joffrey Lavernier at 4,000. If he plays, he's an okay guy to look at that price. Don't really love it. Nerlens Noel at 7,400. He should bounce back. And Pau Gasol at 7,800 is also a good option. At center, Myers Leonard at 4,400. I like. Jahlil Okafor at 59. And Al Horford at 7,600 is the other guy that I've got on my list there. That does it for today's show, everybody. Make sure you are following me on Twitter at @RedRock_Bball. And join Freezerland and become a sponsor of the podcast for the day just by leaving a review on iTunes and a ranking, of course. 5 stars and a review would be awesome. And thank you to everybody across the world who has done that. It has been a phenomenal response. And you've seen me tweet out pictures of the podcast inside the top 15 on iTunes. I still haven't cracked that top 10. I want to get there pretty soon. And it's a pretty big milestone coming up for the podcast in the next couple of weeks, which when it happens, I will announce it. But there's some interesting stuff or some exciting stuff happening with the way that you guys are supporting the podcast. Of course, check out Hardwood Paroxysm and the rest of the podcasts over on the Hardwood Paroxysm Network. There's a lot of great stuff that goes out there, especially if you're a Heat or a Timberwolf supporter. There are individual podcasts for both of those teams that go out on the network, plus the other stuff that Seth Partnow puts out, the Podium Game with Brian Gibberman. There's a lot of great podcasts that go out on that network. And Moneyball, Take Me On. I didn't have a great day today. Still collected a little bit. Probably broke even. A couple of guys got the better of me in head-to-heads, and I'm looking to take them back on today and win my money back. So make sure you get over to moneyball.com.au. Add me as a friend. I'm on there as redrock_bball, and take me up in some of my leagues and head-to-heads contests that I put out there. Once again, follow me on Twitter at redrock_bball. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.